What was it really like to grow up with the British invasion, the second British invasion, through the progressive movement and into the icons like Elton John and Bruce Springsteen, as music progressed from its infancy to where we are today? What was it like to experience a rock concert in the 70s that defined an entire generation? What was it like to build our first stereo system, to listen to this great new music, components that were designed to last a lifetime? I know, I still have mine. I still use it. We learned how to transfer our music from home to our cars. The advent of cassette tape and 8-track. I was there. I experienced it all. Through the decades, the music, yes, has changed. The technology, yes, has changed dramatically. How do we, as boomers, deal with the rapid change of technology when back in the day, things moved at a snail's pace and it was easier to adapt? I was there. I am there. I experienced it all. What was it like to experience Woodstock, Cal Jam, Us Festival, Live Aid? I was there. I've seen it all. Join me, Brad Blue, as I give my perspective.
As well as me, Alec, his son and the voice in the newer generations.
On all these wonderful events that we grew up with as boomers on Full Circle Analog. We are in the middle of two weekends, and probably no matter where you live in the country, you know what I'm talking about. But if you live in Southern California, you definitely know what I'm talking about. And if you live in the Inland Empire where I live, which is known as San Bernardino County, aka the Inland Empire, we are going through a series of major concert events. Last weekend, Easter weekend, was the first weekend. This coming weekend is a carbon copy of last weekend with the same groups on the same days. What am I talking about? Coachella. Yes, Coachella. Now, we have known about Coachella for years, and of course, I didn't live out here until 20 years ago, which is probably about the time that, I forget how many years Coachella has been going on, at least 10, maybe 15. I should probably research that during the timeout and commercial break and get the beat on that. But I just wanted to start recording here and get some thoughts down on the machine because I tried to watch, and I've tried to watch in the past, and because of COVID, and we've had a couple years off where you know, Coachella really didn't happen. This year you could watch what was supposed to be live streaming on all three stages, but I'm sure it was not live, at least a lot of it, because I saw repetition and I saw, you know, times the concert wasn't happening. But anyway, you know, growing up when I did and when I became a young adult was when the birth of the rock concert and the concert tours really kicked in. This is after the Beatles. This is the early 70s, where if you've been following the podcast, you know we finally finished our trilogy of the, which was actually multiple episodes of Peter Jackson's re-editing of the Get Back sessions. And this is after the Beatles broke up. The Get Back sessions concluded in January 30th, 1969. So we're looking at, you know, these other bands are coming out with their first albums, and in some cases their first tours, smaller venues for sure. I know from the Inland Empire perspective that a lot of bands played at what was known then as the Swing Auditorium. It was the only concert venue in the Inland Empire. Its claim to fame is that it was the first booked concert, paid concert, big time,
of the Rolling Stones in the United States. That's a big deal. As I've interviewed several people, especially in my early podcast, when I interviewed musicians and locals who were passionate about music like I am, but had a definitely unique perspective in seeing bands at the Swing Auditorium. And I'm getting the feeling that the Swing Auditorium was very similar to what I've read about the Fillmores, specifically the Fillmore West. Bill Graham took over the Fillmore West and would have multiple different acts playing together in the same night. And it may not be unusual. I mean, you can look at the website Wolfgang's Vault, which is the discovery that Bill Graham kept all the posters, placards, marquees, playbills, programs, whatever there was that was sold or given out at every single concert, I think, that the Fillmore did, he kept them and archived them. And that also includes audio recordings. And it's in the early days when the family, after the untimely death of Bill in a helicopter crash, and the family discovered this warehouse in the warehouse district in San Francisco and came up with all this stuff, it was interesting that so many different types of acts would play. I mean, you could have an opera, a section of an opera, you could have classical music, you could have some folk music, the Jefferson Airplane would come on, it was just the Allman Brothers. I mean, it was as we know, it was an incredibly rich time in the birth of rock music. The early 70s is when the live concert really took off. And the Swing Auditorium, from what I'm hearing from, and like I said, if you listen to my interviews before COVID with acquaintances, friends, and clients of mine who grew up here, the Swing had a very similar setup. There might be, Jethro Tull might be playing with the Starship, might be playing. It was a kind of eclectic, because some of these bands weren't uber famous yet. You know, Quicksilver, Messenger Service, a lot of the Bay Area bands, that kind of thing. Also, that would all be on the same bill. Well, how does that fit in with Coachella? I am perplexed personally by Coachella. I first have a bias. I have never liked open-air concerts. We used to call it, because it was called back then, festival seating. And festival seating meant there was no seats at all. You had to stand for the whole concert. And those of you out there who went to concerts in the 70s, who have continued to go to concerts, maybe some of your favorite bands that are still touring with whoever's still alive in the bands, or, you know, with all the personnel changes, for example, we saw the Red Hot Chili Peppers on their last tour, which is now a decade ago, Stadium Arcadium tour. You will notice one dramatic shift from going to concerts in the 70s and going to concerts in the last 10 plus years. Back in the 70s, you could sit down no matter where you were sitting. And if people stood up for too long, they'd get yelled at, like, "Hey, sit down, we want to see." Well, that has completely flipped to, you know, nobody sits down. And I don't know about you, but I don't care who the band is. I don't want to stand up for 2.5 hours watching them perform. I paid for the seat. I want to sit in it. I don't mind standing up and down once in a while when I'm inspired or the end of a great song. But anyway, festival seating. Never liked it. I went to only one outdoor concert in all the concerts I went to back in the 70s and into the early 80s, which from probably about 72 to about 1985 was that 13-year period where I went from age 16 to 26, and that's when the concerts were happening. From down on the strip at the Roxy Theaters. I think the Roxy is really the only theater or venue I went to on the strip, but there was a million other ones. But from there to the Long Beach Arena, the Forum, the Universal Amphitheater when it was an open air arena. There was down by Lion Country Safari. There was a concert venue, Irvine Meadows or whatever it was called back then. And then it changed names a few times. The last concert I saw there was Billy Squire, opened for Queen. That was a weird concert, but saw concerts all over Southern California. But the majority of the concerts I went to see were either at the Forum or the Long Beach Arena, which is still standing, but it's not a concert setting anymore. It's down near the Long Beach Aquarium. Back then, there was the Long Beach Arena and the Long Beach Auditorium. Very few concerts were in the auditorium. The auditorium was eventually condemned because all the seats were made of wood. And it was, I think, finally condemned by the Long Beach Fire as an unsafe place in case a fire broke out, and it was destroyed. I don't know exactly where it was. That's a whole podcast in itself. But those are the places that I went to concerts. The only outdoor concert I went to was, actually there were a couple of them, but the one that ended my outdoor concert experience was The Who at Anaheim Stadium. Anaheim Stadium is where the California Angels play. And The Who were the headliners. And it was a disaster from start to finish. They had thousands of people out in front of the stadium who wanted to get in, and people got up, and they said the gates were going to open at like 9, and they didn't let anybody in until 9, and there was enough people outside starting to cause a ruckus. People were starting to party, people had to go to the bathroom, and when they opened the gates, there was an energy there that wasn't good. I could feel it. I was excited to see The Who, but as it turns out, Townsend was sick. The crowd was so unruly. Daltrey was spitting at the crowd from the stage. Our stuff got trampled and most of it disappeared, as we had great seats because we stayed there overnight. And then we had a flat tire when we got back to the car, you know, at the end of a long day with all these bands that played before The Who. I think we were there at least 8 hours or more, and I got turned off to outdoor concerts from that point on. Only go indoors and a place where I have a guaranteed seat where I could sit down. So, Coachella, the layout of Coachella, that's the last thing I'd ever want to do, is walk around Apollo ground. One thing it has going for it right now is the weather is unseasonably cool out there. When it gets in, you know, it doesn't take much for it to get in the high 90s, early low 100s, even in the spring out there. So the weather's been cooperating. That's one thing. But just the idea of walking around out there doesn't appeal to me. But most of all, I just do not connect with most of the music that is performed on stage there. And this year there was no one really from my generation. In the years past, they've tried to bring in different things. And, you know, we've had McCartney headline, the Red Hot Chili Peppers headline, you know, and this year it had its own controversies with last minute changes in the lineups. But I tried to watch on the three stages that were being shown live through a link on the Coachella website and watch as much as I could, as much as I could stand. You know, rap music doesn't do nothing for me. And so anyone who's a rapper, there's just no... I come from the beginnings of rock music that were, you know, music and melody based. So just saying rapid fire poetry to songs that have already been released years ago or whatever doesn't appeal to me at all. And I'm really kind of clueless as to who a lot of the bands are. And this was a random thing, but there was one group that came on Friday night that seemed like a throwback to Rock Band. And their name was Role Model. Now I got to check these guys out because they could rock. I mean, they had my foot tapping, and they had written their own songs and singing their own lyrics, and they were the one group that I thought, hey, that's good. You know, I've grown up with my son's music, and he tends to like a lot of different things. A lot of his music to me seems, I like the choral harmonic part of it, but a little too slow, a little too pop, a little too repetitive, but it's good. It's good, it's decent, it has its place. There's several Pandora channels I've got that are my son's on my Pandora channel here that I will listen to once in a while. But so far, you know, over the three nights, and I was fighting a cold over the weekend, so I wasn't feeling great, so I had a lot of time to kill just sampling the bands that were on stage. And I know Harry Styles is considered to be this great guy, and I was trying to figure out what that was all about. So anyway, we're going to take a break here, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about the reemergence of Coachella. It's not unusual for me to not know most of the performers listed, as every year Coachella kind of uses the same layout to show who's playing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for both weekends. And I know that in some years past, there's been big names, and I may know 5 or 10 other names on the list. You know, in years past, we had Paul McCartney, we had Red Hot Chili Peppers, and others that have headlined. One can just kind of Google it and look and see all the other bands that have headlined over the years. So what cracks me up about this particular year is that there's like just two or three names that I know. And I don't know their music at all. I'm not into them at all. Harry Styles is a name. Billie Eilish, who's just a household name, I don't really get what the big deal is about her. That's a generational thing. And is Phineas, is that her brother's name? See, I don't even know that. So there's three names on here that I know. But what makes me laugh a little bit is these names, and there's dozens and dozens of names. I'm sure they were playing on three stages, because that's what it kind of looked like. Looked like the ID names of people on social media. You know, what people call themselves. Just read for a little bit here some of the names that are listed that played in the past couple weeks with Coachella. We've Daniel Caesar, Big Sean, Grupo Firme, Baby Keem, Still Woozy, City Girl, Nikki, Pink Sweats, Black Coffee, Epic High, Spiritualized, Daphne, Martinez Brothers. Now, don't these sound like monikers for people's online presence? And then now the print gets really small on some of these. Code Orange. And there was Role Model, who I mentioned before. They played on Friday night. But then I've looked at some more of their music, and they tend to be a little bit rapper too. But the part I watched, they were pretty good rockers. On Saturday, as we continue our funky names, and these are bands I've never heard of either. Rich Brian, Isaiah Rashad, Conan Gray, Turnstile, Hot Chips, oh, we like that, Arlo Parks, Japanese Breakfast, oh boy, I miss them, Paco Osuna, Mannequin Pussy, oh my goodness. Are they any relation to the Russian band? No, my cat says. I don't know if the mic picked up Pepper talking here, but Pepper's talking here. Yeah, what are the names here? Okay. Some of these names just don't even make any sense. And then on Sunday, we had more of these crazy names. Benda, MS, Fatboy Slim, Jesse Reyes. There's Phineas, as I mentioned before. Fred again. Duck Sauce, Chicago Batman. Ooh. Nathaniel Kino. Blessed Madonnas, Idress, Viagra Boys, look out for them. But they're hot on stage. But you see what I mean? The names are just kind of like the names of usernames on social media when you follow, you know, someone's post. Matter of fact, I think Twitter has some better names on here than are played at Coachella. So anyway, that was kind of my take on that. This the hardest thing is I don't understand what everybody sees in these bands. They're on stage, but they don't seem to exude any intensity. The music doesn't seem important. It seems more like the personality is the most important thing, which I guess one could say is the overall critique of a lot of entertainment these days. It's not the quality that's important. It's just getting product out there.
Getting yourself heard.
Excuse me. See, I'm falling asleep talking about it. This is the perfect the little instrumental segue. There's a perfect example of the kind of electronica you hear on stage. If you sampled any of Coachella over the weekend, and I don't know, maybe it's been 2 years, a lot of acts didn't want to show up. But this Coachella, to me, seemed pretty poor. At least with what's on stage. Now, and then the DJ, don't get me started with the DJ stuff. The lighting is amazing on some of those DJ dance portions of Coachella. People come in and dance to it, listen to it, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. But it's the wizardry of the lighting is amazing, but the music never sends me anywhere except out the door. But I'm fascinated by the electronics of it a little bit, but I went out to Coachella. I would like to go to, I'm assuming there's all kinds of booths, displays, art, culture, youth culture, as it shows up in souvenirs or whatever, food. But as far as being inspired by anything out there, It's kind of a big zero to me. So, and it seemed like it was off. What I am noticing is after a 2.5, just over 2 year break, it seems like the bands from the boomer generation and a little younger are chomping at the bit to get out on tour. I mean, we got Paul McCartney going out on tour next week with the band he's been with forever, at least 15 years now. I think they start in Seattle. Genesis and has just finished up their, what they called their farewell tour. I don't know what the Stones are up to, but they're on again, off again touring schedule, and also dealing with the sad death of Charlie Watts. Even one of my writers I like, Neil Gaiman, he's just coming through California right now, doing poetry readings, book readings. I'd like to have seen that, but it just, not meant to be, may not happen again, but I'd like to really like, he reminds me of Dylan Thomas. You know, what he writes is amazing, although I'm not well read with Neil Gaiman. But his speaking voice is an equal match to his writing ability. So he's on tour. Ringo Starr's All-Star Band is going on tour. I mean, dozens and dozens of bands. I mean, the concert touring, from what I understand, the concerts are pretty expensive too. You know, the LA Times or the Wall Street Journal today was talking about ticket prices. Well, I mean, everything's high right now, but you know, maybe in future podcasts or on my, I'm going to be starting a YouTube channel. I have a YouTube channel, I just haven't published publicly on it. It's kind of been in the works and in on the back burner for a few years. It started when I was filming a course to sell online related to what I do. Scanning, editing, and organizing and preserving photographs. It is on Udemy website, and it's called The Shoebox Solution if you're interested. But my YouTube page really hasn't, I haven't spent a whole lot of time there, but I'd like to be on camera and talk about the things we talk about here on the podcast. You know, 60s and 70s music and culture. I'm going to be going through my vinyl record collection over the next year and digitizing it, and then letting my vinyl records go. After all these years, it did just take up a ton of space, and maybe we'll start the vinyl record club, see what we can do and be a source for that. But anyway, that's a quick kind of just commentary on Coachella. I'm glad it started up again. It's right in our backyard here. It takes place about 50 miles from my house. I live in the Inland Empire. Just before you get to the low desert. Cathedral City, San Jacinto, you know, out towards, you know, Palm Desert, Palm Springs. Of course, Coachella is way beyond that, all the way out in India. This weekend, I believe, and it follows right after it, and it's coming back after a few years, Stagecoach, which is the country western version of Coachella. And from what I'm seeing on local social media here in the Inland Empire today, the traffic is already backing up on the interstate to get out to Indio. So if you're headed out there, be safe. We've got Stagecoach going on this weekend. So in the weeks ahead, we're going to get back to our interview format. I have a couple of friends, Greg, a good friend of mine who grew up out here. And back to our conversations about the growing up, seeing rock concerts here in the Inland Empire with the Swing Auditorium. Greg's got a lot of good stories. And I have a musician, client, who I'm going to try see if I can get him to talk about his experiences in rock music. Hobnobbing and elbowing with some fairly big name bands. So anyway, talking to you about Coachella 22 and some impressions about it. Take care, everybody.
All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to Full Circle Analog, where we connect with the Inland Empire's musical roots. If you really enjoyed this podcast and like to find out when our next episodes go live, we upload every Wednesday. And to get direct links to those episodes, go ahead and follow us at Full Circle Analog on Facebook. You can find us at fb.me/FCAnalog to get there quickly. or you can find us at odnws.com/podcast. It's our official website, and that page has a link to our podcast on basically any platform you can find it on, as well as players for our most popular platforms. Thanks for listening. Check us out next week on Full Circle Analog.